Hello, and welcome to episode 61 of Little Cabin Knits. Change is constant. Little Cabin Knits is a bi-weekly podcast all about knitting, mental health advocacy, my new mama journey, and life happenings here in the wilds of Alaska, with a little bit of Huga sprinkled throughout. I'm your host, Emily. I'm a knitter, crafter, mental health therapist, and explorer of my home state of Alaska. This week's episode contains admin, raise a cuppa, on the couch, personal skill set, a time for Huga, and contemplation corner. So grab a cuppa of your choice, let's sit back, and let's get talking and chatting and catch up with each other. Welcome, my friends. It has been a long time since I sat down to record. I kind of was choking a little bit when I was recording the intro there when I said it's a bi-weekly podcast. That's a laugh, huh? Hopefully we'll be getting back into things as I'm feeling better. But before we get into everything, I thought I would share with you a little audio recording I did earlier this evening. It was a happy accident, actually. I was trying to record little Jimmy laughing, and just as I was hitting record and everything, my husband came home, so you get to hear a pretty typical evening of, you know, daddy coming home and us welcoming him and just being super happy that he's there. So enjoy that little snippet, please.
Yo, do you want to come out and be with mama? What you doing? Are you happy? Come on. Do I hear daddy coming home? Do I hear daddy coming home? Well, hello, daddy.
Hi, son. How's my beautiful baby boy?
Oh, look at that smile.
Still beautiful little baby. That's good. Where's Watson?
He is baking for dinner. He's over in the kitchen. We just got home from the grocery store getting some stuff for dinner. Hello. Yes.
Did you like it?
He didn't like the car ride. He was crying in the car, but he loved being in cars. He was squealing and giggling. It was a good time.
I hope you enjoyed that. And just to clarify, I realized as I was listening back to that I had said at the end that Jimmy didn't enjoy the car ride, but he enjoyed being in cars. Well, Cars was a locally owned grocery store for all of my childhood. And then in my mid-20s, Safeway bought them out, but they kept the name. I think they call themselves Cars Safeway. I think that's what they're called. So it's Carrs. It was owned by the Carrs family, who was a really wealthy family here in Alaska. I haven't heard of any of their family being still around. They probably all moved out of state, but, you know, that's an institution. And of course, we all love Carrs because even though it's now owned by Safeway, we all tend to still feel like it's, you know, quote unquote, locally owned. Anyway, on with the show. So let's talk administration. So today I'd like to announce that officially Charming You Yarns is an official sponsor of Little Cabin Knits. I am so excited. Maureen is one of my favorite people in the world, and she is so generous of heart, and her talent is astounding. And I want you guys to really stay tuned to as we get closer to the end of the year, because I am going to have some very exciting giveaways thanks to her generosity. And so all the yarn, well, almost all the yarn that I knit with Maureen was gifted to me. I have a couple skeins that I did buy from her. And so I'll always note if I bought a skein from her rather than it was given to me. But I also want to note that my promoting of Charming You is not because she is an official sponsor of little cabin knits. I actually approached her to say, hey, can I actually name you as that? Would you feel comfortable with that? And it was because I wanted to respond to her generosity that she has shown to me and to Between Knits and Purls. And she very graciously said yes. And so you'll have to excuse me. I'm getting over the flu. Beyond that, I want to promote her because I genuinely feel that she is one of the most creative and thoughtful and ingenious dyers that are out there right now for dyeing yarn. And so I really want to promote her talent in that way. And she is a new young business, been open a little over a year now. And I really want us to give her some love. It's very hard to make it in the yarn, independent yarn dyeing business. And I know I tried it and I never was able to make an actual living out of it. And unfortunately, I didn't really enjoy the process. It's so exhausting. Oh my gosh, it is extremely physically demanding. And I gave it up because I wasn't feeling as if my talent really was coming into fruition, if you will. I felt like mainly people were buying my yarn because they liked me. And I still feel that way, let's just be honest. But Maureen, I would buy her yarn whether I knew her or not, whether I was a beneficiary of her generous spirit. And I'm not just talking about her generosity in sending me yarn, but her generosity as a friend and a great supporter. And so whether or not I knew her or not, I still think that she would be in my top three favorite independent dyers today. So I am pleased to announce that she is an official sponsor, and we will be having some giveaways later on towards the end of the year, which, by the way, this is November 9th that I'm recording it. So in the next month or so, we'll be having some giveaways. All right. Besides from that, where can you find me? Well, I am Anders Mill Knits on Instagram and Ravelry. You can find me on YouTube with my YouTube channel Between Knits and Purls. And I just recorded a couple weeks ago a solo episode like I did way back in the day, back when I was actually, my YouTube channel was called Anders Mill Knits, but now it's obviously changed. And what's exciting on YouTube is now that we can tag ourselves kind of as if we're an Instagram profile or a Twitter account or a TikTok account. So if you put into the search engine the @ Between Knits and Purls, it should come up with our channel right away. So I hope that we, Stephanie and my co-host and I, can sit down and record pretty soon, but I'm not holding my breath, and I will tell you why in a minute during Raise a Cuppa. Otherwise, you can find the show notes at betweenknitsandpearls.com. And guess what? I actually was able to sit down and write down official show notes today, including all of my notes and thoughts around my big segment that I go into a little later of personal skill set, which is going to be all about the change process. Looking at the big picture and the small picture all together. And if you have any questions or a comment, you can email me at littlecabinknitsak@gmail.com. And I just learned that also we can chit chat on Spotify. I haven't attempted that yet, but I think I will try and post a question to Spotify on based off of this episode. And since I think it's going to be a public forum, I'm going to post the question, who is your current independent yarn dyer? I'd love to hear who your favorite yarn dyer is out there. I'm not talking about the big companies like Knit Picks or any of the others, but, you know, independent yarn dyer like Charming You or Zebra Yarns, like people like that. All right. Raise a Cuppa. There is so much to update you on that instead of doing my normal journal entry that I do in the show notes, I actually, in the show notes, I just wrote out some bullet points for me to cover, and I'll try and make this as short as possible. I know that you guys enjoy hearing about my life happenings, and I love sharing them with you. I love doing that with you because I feel so connected with you when I do that. And so, but I will still try and keep this segment as short as possible. So the big news is that my little boy, Jimmy, or James, he is now 5 months old, and he is so precious. We love him so much. It's just astounding to me, his progress, and especially his growth. I was actually looking at some pictures of him the other day, and he was so tiny when he was born. You know, he was born at 6.6 pounds when he was born. And then the next day, of course, he lost a pound. So he was at 5.10, I think, the next day. And then, of course, that to me is his official weight, 5.10. And he was a month early. And so he was super tiny, but he was just long as could be. I felt he was really long when he was first born. And I saw a picture of him the other day in my phone, my library there, of my husband holding him as a newborn. And my husband's hands were bigger than our son at that time. And now I took a picture of him this morning and sent it to my husband. We have a ritual where my husband checks in on us mid-morning and we send him a picture of whatever we're doing at that moment. And Jimmy was laying on the couch and his legs were hanging off of the couch. And my husband immediately commented back, "He's bigger than the couch now." And I was like, yes, he's gotten so tall already. I don't know his height because we haven't taken him to the doctor in a couple months. And I'm trying really hard not to take him to the doctor unless we have to, mainly because we have a huge outbreak right now of the flu and also RSV. And it's hitting children and especially babies and our vulnerable older adults extremely hard. I haven't heard of a death as yet, but that's possibly because I'm not in the know. But I do know that quite a few people that I know that have had babies that are about Jimmy's age have been hospitalized. In fact, a coworker just had a baby a couple weeks ago, and the baby is just got released from the hospital today because of RSV again. And so I'm trying really hard not to take him out in gatherings or to the doctor's office where we all know germs abound. But that didn't save me. Officially 2 weeks ago today, I contracted the flu, and that was after I got the flu shot from my doctor. Apparently there's two strains going on this year, and I was infected with the what I think they called it strain B, which apparently is a very strong flu. And some friends of mine also have the flu and have also had COVID, which, by the way, my family, we also had COVID since we last spoke. And we all agreed that this flu is worse than our experience with COVID. Like, it has just wrecked us physically. And it hasn't been until, I feel like, honestly, possibly yesterday, but really today, that I've woken up and I felt like I can breathe easier. Like, I don't have that really tight chest feeling. I still have a lot of phlegm. I still have a lingering cough, which is not as bad as it was, but I do have that still. But 2 weeks, still have it. So, speaking of, we all did contract COVID. Unfortunately, Mr. Radio's coworker had COVID, and Mr. Radio came in contact with it at work. I think this was in August, if my memory serves. And he came home and tested positive at home, but then we wanted to make sure, so we took him to the doctor, and they came out to the car and tested him. And then the next day, I started having symptoms. I still maintain that I think Jimmy got it as well, but we never had him tested. But we do know that my husband and I had COVID, and I was still testing positive for COVID a month later, although my doctor said that they felt that those were false positives because apparently that's a thing that I didn't know about. So there you go. But otherwise, we've been super busy and having so much fun. We took little Jimmy on his first camping trip ever for Labor Day weekend. We went to one of my favorite campgrounds in the whole world. If you remember last year, I don't remember what episode it was, but it was my birthday episode last year in July, so July 21. Mr. Radio and I went to Kenai Lake, and there's a Trail River campground out there. It's our absolute favorite, well, again, probably in our top three campgrounds in Alaska. It's very well maintained, very spacious, but it doesn't feel like it's been over cultivated, right? But also one of the things that I absolutely adore about it is that there is no cell service at all. You have to drive out about 2 miles back in towards the main highway before you can get cell service. And I love the peacefulness that comes from being out of cell service. I just love it. And so we went back for Labor Day weekend with my dad and my mom, so that my dad and my mom have a luxurious motorhome. And so they brought their motorhome, and then Jimmy, Jeremy, and I took, well, officially it's now our motorhome. His father gave us and Jeremy's brother his motorhome, which is a Class C motorhome. And literally the night before we went camping, Jeremy's dad said, "Hey, guess what? You now have a camper." So now officially I'm a motorhome owner or RV owner. And so we took it out, and the motorhome isn't anything grand or special. It's quite old. It's from the early 90s, but it does suit our purposes because, generally speaking, we don't really stay inside the motorhome hardly at all. We're always outside except for to sleep. We don't even cook in the motorhome. We cook over the campfire for everything when we're camping. But this time was a tad different, and I was so glad that my parents had their luxurious motorhome because it was so cold and rained so much. I was so disappointed in the rain and everything. So, and because, of course, we had Jimmy with us, we didn't want to be out in the cold and the rain all the time with our little fella. So there, we did spend a good portion, especially if there was a break in the weather, we were outside and we cooked 90% of our meals over the campfire as well, even with that. But otherwise, we kind of all congregated into my parents' luxurious motorhome, and it was very nice. We played cards. My dad snuggled with Jimmy. They have such a beautiful relationship. I just absolutely love it. They both just seem to relax and let go of things. Like, you know, Jimmy could be screaming like a banshee, which he hardly ever does, by the way. He is such a well-mannered little boy. But as soon as he's in my father's arms, he just immediately calms down. And he's just like, "Oh, okay, this is Grandpa. I'm in my safe place. I'm going to go to sleep now." Speaking of my father, he had triple bypass surgery 2.5 weeks ago. That has been pretty hard on all of us, especially because his surgery turned into over a 12-hour ordeal because he had they had him out of surgery and into the recovery room or the ICU, and my father wouldn't stop bleeding internally in his chest, and so they had to take him back in, and he wouldn't wake up either, so they had to take him back in for a second surgery, and they found a vessel that they hadn't sewn up properly or maybe even completely missed. I don't even know. The story to me is a little hazy. I feel like the doctors didn't really tell us everything and were trying to cover their butts. But and so my dad was in the hospital for a little over a week, and now he's home. And it's been really hard in another way because of the flu, I didn't want to be around my dad because he's in such a vulnerable position. And so my dad hadn't seen Jimmy for over 10 days. I finally felt that it was safe enough to bring Jimmy over to see them on Sunday. And we had such a wonderful time. My brother and his family showed up, and we just laughed and laughed and talked, and you know, even with that few people. So my brother has three daughters, but has two up here at the moment. And so there was my two nieces, my mom, my dad, my brother, his wife, and little Jimmy and myself. And the noise was so much. My family, we are not quiet people. But we just had so much fun. But we did quiet down whenever we were speaking directly to my dad, because something also happened during his surgery, and he hasn't regained his voice yet back. And we're super worried that he's not going to at this point. And I think that, well, first off, he had a tube down his throat for over 12 hours. But second off, I think that, again, the hospital probably messed up and they hurt him, his throat, in some way. I can't prove this, but it seems rather suspicious to me that we are over 3 weeks out from his surgery and he still sounds the same as when he first woke up, with hardly any voice at all. And it pains him tremendously to speak. And so I am not pleased with the care that my father received. And I wish that I could vocalize that in other formats to tell people how displeased I am. But I am trying to be patient, and I'm trying to be compassionate towards the people that did the surgery for my dad. In other news, I have gone back to work, and so I have been working like a fiend. I on top of my normal job as the training director of Catholic Social Services here in Alaska, I'm the only one in our organization with the background and the certifications to develop this new program called Supportive Family Services. And right when I got back to work, within 2 weeks of me coming back, we got a grant, a pretty substantial grant from our municipality here in Anchorage to implement this program that I had proposed to them before I even went on paternity leave, like about 2 months actually before I even went into the hospital to have Jimmy. And even though we knew we had been awarded the grant, they just kept on like postponing the actual. So there's a verbal award, then there's the contract award, and then there's the official, here's the money in the bank part of the award. And so they kept on postponing that last bit. And then when it did come, they still expected me to perform the same amount of work that I had proposed would take me about 7.5 months to complete. They now wanted me to have it done between September and the end of December. Like my grant ends at the end of September. So not only do I have to fulfill all the grant requirements, but I actually had to build the program out because we didn't have any money to spare for me to actually build a program until that moment. And so it's been extremely long days. There's been quite a few days where I've actually clocked in at almost 15 and a half hours of work. And there was one day that I clocked in at almost 18 hours of work. And that was the first day that I taught my Strengthening Families class. But I love this program. I am extremely passionate about helping not just the houseless in our community, but the vulnerable in our community, and especially in families. If we're ever going to stop having the homeless / houseless pandemic that we have in our society, we have to address it in a generational model. We can't just address it as at the individual level. We have to look at the entire family structure of the individual that is houseless. And I've believed that for a long time. And I was so glad that when I approached Catholic Social Services with this idea, that they felt the same way. And so they supported me in trying to get grants so that I could start making this happen. I now, though, have a partner in crime from my department. And it has been decided, everybody has decided that at the end of December, now that I've got the program running and we can at the end of December, once this grant is done, I can go back to being solely the director of training, and then my partner will continue on with the actual program of supportive family services. And I'm pretty excited about that. And I'm not going to bore you with all the exciting thing that's the things that's happening for me in my training department, but let's just say that I am ridiculously excited about the opportunities that I have. I have been making a lot of community contacts. Like, I've been cold calling all of these different agencies in town, because one of my goals is to de-silo nonprofit organizations in the Anchorage area. We all do such good work, and a lot of times I find that we overlap in our work, and yet nobody really knows what the other organizations are doing unless we kind of stumble upon it. And so I want to bring us all together if possible. And one of the ways that I thought we could start this conversation was if I provided a training for free to all of these organizations. And so I'm doing that in December as well. It's going to be a 3-day workshop, and they're going to be certified as trainers to then go back to their organizations, and they get CEUs, continuing education credits for this and everything. And so very excited about that. But that, on top of everything else, is very exhausting. I am. And then, of course, little Jimmy, he wants to be attached to me at all times, and I absolutely adore that. And at the same time, it does make it difficult to do work, to type, and all this kind of stuff. So a lot of times what I will do is I'll have him laying in my lap, and my computer will be up on a little, what's it called? One of those, like, folding TV dinner table things. And so my arms will be kind of hovering over Jimmy's belly, and he just is grabbing at my arms, trying to pull my hands down to him, because he's just like, no, all your attention needs to be on me. So moving on, my last little bit is that, our last two little bits, we, Mr. Radio and I celebrated our first wedding anniversary, and we were reflecting on how amazing this last year has been, how I wouldn't ever say that this first year of marriage was a struggle, especially when I compare it to my first marriage. There's literally no comparison. And at the same time, we did go through a lot. I mean, within, 2.5 weeks of us being married, we found out I was pregnant, and I was very, very ill all of the pregnancy with preeclampsia and everything. And we did some home remodel, and we're about to do another major home remodel starting Friday the 11th. We're going to be working on that, and it should be completed by the end of next Tuesday. We've had Jimmy, we've seen so much growth between the two of us in our relationship. And yet for me, I also see a lot of areas that I need to change and grow, in particular in how I sometimes address my husband. When I am ill, I become rude. I'm a jerk. Let's just name it what it really is. And for most of my pregnancy, I was very ill. And so I fell into this pattern of snapping at my husband, especially when I was, in particularly that day, pretty down. And it hadn't happened for a while, but then when I had the flu this last 2 weeks, I was noticing that it was starting to creep back in. And I was just so disappointed with myself. And so my husband and I actually had a conversation about this earlier this week. And my husband was making excuses for me, saying, you've been very sick and stressed. You've been working such long hours and then taking care of Jimmy while you're doing all of this. And I just turned to him and I just said, honey, you cannot make excuses for me. If you make excuses for me, I will continue in this negative behavior. I need you to help me take accountability for my actions. And he just looked at me like he was so scared. He's just like, how am I supposed to do that? And so we came up with a code word for him to say when he found me starting to snap at him. Luckily, I haven't done it since we had this conversation, but my hope is that when the time comes, and it will come when he needs to use the code word, that A, he remembers to do it, and B, that I won't then snap even more loudly at him because he used the code word. And lastly, the last little thing to announce is that little Jimmy had his first Halloween, and he was a little lamb, and he was so adorable. If you want to see pictures of all these things that I just discussed, you can go to betweenknitsandpearls.com, and you can see some pictures of our camping trip of Jimmy in his lamb outfit, and a picture of us on our little one night getaway for our anniversary. There's a picture of me and Jimmy on the front porch with Mr. Radio in the background from that time. And that, my friend, is all the updates of life happenings. On the couch. Well, I just have two things that I'm currently working on. I have, as you guys all well know, I have a lot of projects that are at the moment languishing, and I do hope to get back to them. But at the moment, being a new mom, I consider myself still a new mom at 5 months, you know, I still find it very difficult to knit on anything that takes any amount of concentration insofar as my summer festival cardigan, I think that's what it's called, that has some lace in it. And I can't think of many of the other things, but even working on socks has been a little bit challenging. So currently, I've just got two things actually currently being worked on. The first one is my Musselboro hat by Isolde Teague. I'm calling it my Charming Musselboro because I'm using a skein of Charming Muse yarn from her kit that she did for Christmas in July. My favorite kit of hers so far, even though the one I just received from her for the Halloween kit is astounding. And I don't like Halloween stuff, guys. I don't like decorating for Halloween. I don't like yarns in the colorways of Halloween. Like, I don't like the black and orange kind of combination. I don't like spider webs, motifs. I think cute ghosts are cute, but I wouldn't want a project bag with cute ghosts. But anyway, her Halloween kit just floored me. I'll tell you the truth. I wasn't actually looking forward to actually receiving the kit because I was dreading stating out loud if I liked it or not, because I was pretty sure I wasn't going to like it. And then it came and I loved it. It's so awesome. But still, my favorite kit is my Christmas in July kit that I got from her. I love the bag that is kind of a vintage colors of Christmas trees with some oceanic blue polka dot fabric as well. And then the colorway of July Jingle is perhaps my favorite colorway of all time to date. And I'm looking at it right now, and I'm pretty sure this is by far my favorite colorway of all time. And I've been knitting on this. So the colorway is got some kind of faded green, like kind of, I want to say it's almost a Christmassy green, like a light, light Christmassy green, but then it's also not because it's faded and it's so soft and dramatic. And then there's a section of pinks that is speckled with deeper pinks in it. And then there's two mini skeins that came with it, with what I would call a raspberry pink mini skein and a golden yellow mini skein. And so I used the two mini skeins to knit the what I'm going to have as the brim of my Musselboro hat. And so I've got 2.5 inches of raspberry pink, and then I did a purl row, which the pattern does not call for, but I wanted to do it because I have because the next portion was my mini skein of the golden yellow, and I have 2.5 inches of that before I go back into the main colorway for the rest of the hat. Now, something I didn't mention in Raise a Cuppa was about actually Labor Day weekend when we were on our camping trip. I woke up our first morning camping and my right thumb was throbbing and in a lot of pain, and I was having a hard time moving it and everything, but I kind of was just, I just thought that maybe I slept on it wrong and stuff and it would go away, and so I just kind of powered through that whole weekend thinking it would just go away. And I tried to knit some, and I did knit a little bit, but not very much while we were camping just because it hurt so badly. And then we were home, and the next day after we got home, I was taking a shower, and I toweled myself off. And there was, as I was toweling my back off, there was a very loud pop in my right thumb / wrist area. And at that point, like, my entire hand went numb. I had shooting pains going all the way up my arm, like really bad, on fire, bad pains. And I dropped the towel and everything, and I was crying out, and I was in tears, and I was calling my husband on the phone, like, I think I broke my hand, I can't use it, and he's at work, and he's like, oh my gosh, what do I do? So we went to the doctor, and they suspected that I had either sprained it really bad by picking up Jimmy, or I had even possibly torn a tiny bit my ligament in, or a muscle, I think they said, actually, a muscle. And they wanted, obviously, to image it, but I asked them, is there going to be a difference in the amount, in the healing process if you were to image it? And they said, no, actually, it would be the same. It would just take longer to heal if, in fact, you did tear a muscle. So I was like, nah, we're just going to opt out of that. So it has been a couple months now of me wearing hand braces and compression sleeves on my right hand, and being very careful about how I lift my son, but it also has meant that I haven't been able to knit hardly at all until actually this week. And pardon me. Ironically, I'm now feeling those same twinges in my left hand, and more than likely it's because I've been leaning so heavily on my left hand usage, and it's not used to that. So I have been able to knit here and there, touch and go, and I did complete something, and you'll hear about it on the shelf segment. But I was noticing today I got out my Musselboro hat, and as I was writing my show notes, and I was looking at it, and I can see a distinct difference in my gauge from pre-accident / pain in my hand to now. My tension of my yarn now is so loosey-goosey, rather wobbly, and I don't really like it, but at the same time, it's not a make-or-break kind of situation. Whereas my knitting before all this happened, like a friend of mine said actually today, when she saw this, she's like, it looks store-bought. Your stitches are so beautiful and even. And she's been asking me to teach her to knit. And so we're going to actually get to that in the next couple weeks. And we're going to start teaching her to knit. But anyway, I just have noticed the difference. And it's, you know, it's just something I'm going to have to deal with. You know, things change, life changes. Maybe I'll get my tension and I'll be able to knit in the normal way again. What I have to do now for knitting is I switch between picking and throwing about every two rows so that I can rest things. My thumb in particular, because of the way that I hold my needles, the thumb puts the pressure on the needle and controls the needle. And so it about two rounds of the Musselboro hat is about all I can get out before I get a little twinge. And so then I'll switch to say my traditional continental knitting for two rounds, then my left hand feels a little bit twingy, so I switch back again. So, you know, it just, you know, I'm making it work. And there is a little bit of pain, but the compression sleeves in particular help a lot. I don't feel like I need the actual braces for my hands anymore at this point. I think the compression sleeves do the trick, but I still have to be very careful and patient with myself, and I'm okay with that. Like, I don't really have a lot of time to be crafting right now anyway, so the little bit of time I do get, I have a lot of joy in those moments. The other thing that's on the couch is a latch hook rug kit that I got from Amazon. While I've been down the last 2 months, I was really aching to be crafting something, and it needed to be something that I felt I could easily pick up and put down. It could be around little Jimmy and I not be worried. So things like painting and paper crafts, all of those things were out. And then I remembered when I was a little girl, latch hooking rugs with my grandmother. And so I thought, oh, I remember liking that a lot. So I went on Amazon and I just kind of got a cheap little kit just to see if I would still like it. And I really do. It's so fun. And it doesn't hurt my arm nearly as much as knitting does. So I've been working on that, although I haven't worked on it in the last 2 weeks since I started knitting again, you know, things like that. But it's so adorable. It's a image of a little fox curled up and sleeping. And it's going to go in Jimmy's room, which I'm currently sitting in. He doesn't sleep in here yet. I don't know when he will. He sleeps in his bassinet beside our bed, on my side of the bed. And I love that. I don't want that to ever end. I just want my little boy there, period. So it's going to be very difficult when we need to transition him back in to a crib and to his own room. But until then, I'm just going to love having him right there with me in there. So that, my friends, is on the couch. On the shelf, I have, let's see, three things that I wanted to talk about here. I started and completed, since we last spoke, a hat for Jimmy, and I also started this after I hurt my hand, so it was really slow going, but I was, just last week, I was determined to get it done because it's a hat, and it's cold outside, and this hat in particular has ear flaps, and I've been really concerned about my son's ears when we're out and about, and so them getting cold. So I was determined to do it. And so this is Albert's Pilot Hat by Petite Knits. And I used some leftover yarn from my husband's wedding sweater that I knit for him and Provençal Tweed. I forget the colorway, but it's like a chestnutty brown. And I let my husband choose the yarn for our son's hat. I think I'm going to knit him another one that's slightly bigger. I really love this pattern. It's unusual because it starts from the crown and you do increases and then you knit the body of the hat and then the construction for the ear flaps I won't get into, but honestly, it was pretty great. I do love Petite Knits patterns designs. That's the word. I struggle a lot of times with her patterns because she writes in a paragraph format, and sometimes it's difficult for me to comprehend what she's saying or to keep track of things as in her instructions. If you guys have ever knit anything by Curious Handmade, I love her checklist. The way she writes her patterns to me just speaks to my soul of organization. I haven't knit one of her patterns in years. Actually, I haven't bought one of her patterns in years, but back in the day, I love organization, brief descriptions in knitting patterns. And so I struggle a little bit with Petite Knits' writing style. And I know that I think it's mainly because, I don't know if she's Danish or from Sweden or something like that, one of the Nordic countries. And so English is her second language. So I'm just like, you know what? As far as I'm concerned, you know, for her writing a knitting pattern in her second language, dude, she does amazing. So I'm not really complaining at all. If this was her first language, if English was her first language, I might be a little bit more picky about it. That being said, I adore her patterns. I love the simple lines in her designs, the classic lines. And she is seeing a huge amount of love from people on Ravelry right now. I have quite a few of her patterns, and I want to cast on a adult side version of one of her sweaters that I knit for Jimmy. And I can't remember the name of it all of a sudden. But when my hands are feeling better, I thought that maybe I would cast that on and stuff. So we'll see. But that is done. He's been wearing his hat every time we go out. He seems to really like it. So I'm really happy with that. There's one thing I haven't done yet. So the hat has a little bit of a little eye cord that goes underneath the chin. And then if you sew on a button onto the opposite ear flap, you can attach the cording to the other side. So the hat stays firmly on his head and everything. And I just have not sewn on a button. So there is an eye cord that hangs down, and he loves to pull on it, and he loves it. Just moves his hat all around. It's so funny because almost every single time he'll be in his car seat and we'll be driving somewhere, and when I put him in the car, his hat will be sitting perfectly on his head. But by the time we get to our destination, I come around to get him out of the car, he'll have pulled so much on the string that one of the ear flaps is usually covering most of his face, and he's looking around like he's almost trying to eat the ear flap. So he kind of looks like a dog chasing his own tail, right? And so he's trying to grab the ear flap with his lips, and it's just the cutest thing. I just love it. So I will admit that I kind of have loved that so much, in fact, that I have been like, oh, do I really want to knit a button on there and ruin this? But I do, because it does need to stay on properly. The next thing that I have finished is my Tendrilly by Dee O'Keefe. This was the shawl that I was knitting for my OBGYN. And I'm not so sure now that I'm going to give it to her. I didn't get into everything. You guys, if you listened to my last episode, you heard about how a lot of things went wrong with my C-section, and it's been a very long healing journey, and I'm still not completely healed. I have graduated from the wound clinic now, so I don't have actual holes in my belly anymore, and yet I have a lot of twinges. I did go and exercise one day a few weeks ago, and when I got off the exercise bike, I thought I was going to faint, and there was a really strange, really awkward pressure in my lower belly where my C-section scar is, and I've kind of gotten a little angry at my OBGYN, so I haven't given it to her, and I don't know if I will. I might just keep it. I don't know. We'll see. It is a very beautiful shawl, very warm, even though I knit it with a Knit Picks Brava in the Marina colorway, which means it is in 100% acrylic yarn. I did that specifically because I thought I was going to be giving it to a non-knitting person, and so I wanted her to feel comfortable that she could throw this in the wash and not ruin it. It's surprisingly warm and squishy and soft, and I actually have been wearing it the past few days and really enjoying it. I felt a little guilty wearing it, and at the same time, I'm like, you know what? I don't know that I'll ever give it to her. Just saying. So there is that. So my tin really is finally done. I finished it August, I want to say. Mid-August. Yeah. Just knitting on it when Jimmy would go to bed or when he would be on his naps and things like that. So the last thing that I did finish since last we spoke was I finished Mr. Radio's robot amigurumi doll squishy thing that I knit one for Jimmy and I knit one for Mr. Radio. And mystery, and this is by Amy Gaines, and again, I knit this from some acrylic yarn, and I don't remember what it is. It's something I got just from Michaels, so probably a Lion brand line of yarn. But I have finished that as well, and I finished that also in August. So all of those things are my completed objects at the moment and on the shelf. Before we go into personal skill set, I did record some more audio tonight of little Jimmy. I was in the kitchen and I was cooking dinner and cleaning the kitchen, and he was sitting in his seat kind of in the kitchen with me. He loves to be in there with me. He's fascinated by the kitchen, fascinated. And so he was in such a good mood and just giggling and laughing and squealing. So I had to record. And the very first thing you hear in just a moment from little Jimmy is a squeal. So it's not your headphones acting up. That is my son squealing at the recording. So I just thought I would share that with you before we go into personal skill set.
What are you saying, mister?
Personal skill set. So today's topic is, it's the same as the name of this episode, change is constant. So perhaps the one constant thing in our lives is that change is always occurring. The changes may be big events, such as having your first baby, like me, getting married or divorced, moving, starting or ending a job, and I could go on. But there are also daily small changes that happen regularly, or I would might maybe even use the word frequently. We change our mind on topics of interest or conversation. We learn new things that help us grow and understand things better, which then means that we are changing. Even the very act of choosing what to wear or where to go or what to eat, these are choices that then lead to change in our daily routines or in how we present ourselves and so on and so forth. So that's why I say that change is constant, both the big and the small. And there are really big moments in life that create change, and then there are changes that occur within us throughout different stages in our life. And in my field, we call this developmental stages of life, or for today's episode, I'm going to call it developmental changes. Now, in the early to mid 1900s, psychologists and psychiatrists and even philosophers, they were really enthralled with the changes that a person experiences throughout their lifespan. And they contemplated what the driving forces were behind these changes. One such psychologist, his name was Erik Erikson, and to this day, his theory of developmental change that he came up with in the 1940s is the most widely held to be correct as far as what we see of developmental changes in a person's lifespan. So Erickson maintained that personality develops in a predetermined order through 8 different stages of psychological development. So this is from infancy to adulthood and on to death. So during each stage, the person experiences a psychological crisis, if you will, which could have a positive or negative outcome for the individual's personality development. So as I just said, Erickson identified 8 developmental stages that a person goes through. Within each of these stages, our mental and physical capacities change, and so does the way in which we interact with the world around us. So I wanted to go over the different stages and give you a tiny little blurb about what is generally thought of to occur in each stage. And by the way, yet again, I will just repeat that I have this all written out on my website, Between Knits and Pearls, episode 61. So the first stage is called infancy, and this is from birth to 18 months. Now, I will say that Erickson also has some really more technical terms that he names each of these stages. But for our purposes, I'm going to use the more what would be considered common known names for these stages. So again, the first stage is infancy, and it's from birth to 18 months. And during this stage, the infant is uncertain about the world in which they now live, and they look toward their primary caregiver for stability and consistency of care. So in my case, I and my husband are the primary caregivers of my child, Jimmy, and so that he looks to us to constantly determine, is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? Am I safe? Am I not safe? And, you know, it's generally acknowledged that a child actually doesn't really comprehend that they are a separate being from their mother. We kind of hypothesize that that separation doesn't really happen until age 5. For me, I see this in my son every day. I have to be very careful when I come into our bedroom at night to get ready for bed, because if Jimmy hears my voice or determines by my movements that I am in the room, he will wake up and immediately want to cuddle with me and be with me. Like, he is so in tune with me and where I am at every moment. The next stage is called early childhood, and this is between the ages of 2 and 3 years old. So according to Erickson, children at this stage are focused on developing a sense of personal control over their physical skills and even a sense of independence. So we're starting to hint at the separation of between mother and child, but this hasn't really taken place. They're just kind of exploring this little independence. And you could see that a lot of times in children, they call it the terrible twos, you know, a lot of no's and yelling, a lot of asking questions like why and things like that, because they're really exploring. The next stage is called preschool. This is from the ages of 3 to 5 years of age. And during this stage, we call it the initiative versus guilt stage, and children assert themselves more frequently through directing play and other social interactions. And I won't go into that because, honestly speaking, I don't really have much knowledge about this age range, so I don't really feel confident really kind of dissecting that one. The next one is stage 4, school age between 6 and 11 years. And children at this stage where they are learning to read and write, to do mathematics, to do things on their own, and teachers begin to take an important role in the child's life as they teach the child specific skills. So their awareness expands outside of the family unit or their primary caregivers. Stage 5 is adolescence, and this is between the ages of 12 to 18 years. And this is a crucial stage. This stage and part of the next stage is a crucial stage in the mental health field. And we're learning more and more of that as the years go by. And so adolescents between the ages of 12 and 18 years. So during this stage, adolescents search for a sense of self and personal identity through an intense exploration of personal values, beliefs, and goals. We now know we've through neuroscience and the study of the brain, we now know that an individual's brain grows exponentially between the ages of 12 to 25. Like, enormous change is taking place during this time period. And so while there is a debate going on currently about, is Erikson's age ranges still appropriate to his 8 stages of change, we still hold that his theory around stage 5 holds true. This is a time when a person is really trying to identify who they are, really kind of determine some of their values and identify as an individual. You will see this a lot of times in youth when they are quote unquote rebelling. You know, sometimes they'll go through a gothic stage and all this kind of stuff. And oftentimes parents will say, oh, they're just going through a stage, you know, or something like that. I can't actually remember if that's the phrase they use. And they're right. That's exactly what's happening. So this is a very, very important stage of life. And I, for one, am pretty darn nervous when Jimmy comes to this stage of life, because I want to do everything possible to make sure that he is supported and has the resources he needs in order to develop these different things. And at the same time, I don't want to be a helicopter mom or be too pushy. And so it's an interesting dynamic that parents have to play through all the stages of a child's life or an individual's life, but in particular through these teenage years. The next stage is stage 6, and this is young adulthood. And Erikson put this at ages 19 to 40 years of age. Again, the age ranges are currently kind of being debated and rethought through. I don't see a conclusion happening anytime soon or any major changes to Erikson's 8 stages philosophy or theory happening anytime soon. But there is a lot of discussion going on about it because of the things that we are learning through scientific study, where when Erikson actually came out with this study, he didn't have the access to the advanced technology that we do now. So really think about this. In the 1940s, this man developed this without all of the advanced technology that we have today. And yet we still acknowledge that on the whole, his stages of change hold true. It just might be that the age range that he identified might be different. Okay, so young adult from 19 to 40 years of age. So during this stage, the major conflict in a person's life centers around forming intimate, loving relationships with other people. Makes sense, doesn't it, right? We are really concerned with finding their one person, getting married, settling down. Socially, this might change from time to time. I mean, in the past 20 odd years, there's been this pushback of like women having their independence and going out and living on their own and experiencing life and having children later and settling down later in life. But it still falls within that age range that Erikson identified. And I just exited that age range. I am now 41 as of this last July. So I just exited that. And now I am in his next stage, which is called middle adulthood. And this age range is 40 to 65 years of age. So at this stage, Erikson is thinking, okay, the person has developed their values, their belief systems, they've found their person, they've formed attachments with other people in life. They're settled into their job or employment of choice. And so at this stage, he hypothesizes that this is a stage where we give back to society through the raising of our children, being productive at work, and becoming involved in community activities and organizations. Through Jenner, what did I write there? So in this generation or this age range, we develop a sense of being a part of a bigger picture. So we're stepping back. We're looking at things from a wider lens, from a more, I don't know if the word is pragmatic, compassionate, we're kind of like a little bit more reserved, as if we're more observers of the world around us, kind of thing. And we can pick and choose more deliberately what we do in this age of life. Again, the reason we're also having this discussion about the age ranges is because since women and men are settling down later in life, the age of raising children has now been pushed out further and further. So I'm in that stage where technically I've entered into stage 7, which is middle adulthood, but I am doing the steps of the young adulthood where I've found my person, I've settled down, I've now had a child, right? So we're seeing this blurring of stages going on and questioning the age ranges if they're now appropriate for this new development in our global society. And the last stage is maturity, and that's from ages 65 to death. And it's during this time that we contemplate all of our accomplishments, and we can develop a sense of integrity if we see that we and judge ourselves to have lived a successful life. I see this very often I saw this in my grandparents. I see it currently in my parents. I see it in my father-in-law and mother-in-law, where they take stock. And it's interesting because they also become, this isn't mentioned in Erickson's Stages of Change, but there is a general air of more generosity, at least in the people that I know that are in this stage. And when I talk about generosity, I am actually talking about financially, but I am also talking about generosity of spirit and having a lot more patience and understanding for the foibles that they see in the younger generations. So I see that in the people around me. I know that there are people out there that are, you know, grumpy, if you will, and a little jaded from their life experiences. So you have to wonder, are those people, have they begun looking back and they are dissatisfied with the things that they are reviewing? So now the question is for you, what changes do you need to make so that when you are at that stage, that final stage of Erickson's theory of maturity, what changes do you need to currently make to put you in a place, in a position, so that when you do look back, you do have that feeling of having led a successful life? And I want to really emphasize here, not putting too much emphasis on financial success or owning things success, but in your relationships, in your experiences, in your memories, and how you have interacted with yourself, how you've held up to those values and that you identified as a young person all the way back in stage 5 in adolescence. Did those hold true? So what changes do you now need to make that happen? And by understanding these stages that I just went over, this can assist us in clarifying where we've been, where we are now, and perhaps even foretell some of our future expectations. Now, I don't want to sit there and dun, 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 but it could, you know, possibly give you a foreshadow of what is to come. Beyond this, however, there are changes that occur throughout life due to our choices and the motivation that we have behind those choices. So I've mentioned in past episodes that I am certified in this modality called motivational interviewing, and I teach that to and coach it to our case managers and employees at Catholic Social Services. And we hold that in motivational interviewing, we hold that a person is in a constant stage of change in their lives, and that we In particular, in the social work field, we can assist a person in clarifying their motivation behind a change, and even sometimes even providing the motivation to continue on within the change process. Now, motivational interviewing also developed a theory called the stages of change. Now, this isn't anything new. I mean, they just kind of coalesced all these ideas into a pretty darn organized and clear fashion. So it's not that they came up with this brand new thing. It's almost as if they reinvented the wheel and made it more easy for us to understand. But this theory defines the different stages that a person progresses through as they become aware of change and adopt it into their lives. So let's go through this. There are technically there are four stages of change, but there is a hidden stage of change as well that I'll get into at the end. So the first stage of change is pre-contemplation. Now, in this stage, a person either may or may not be fully conscious of the need to change a behavior or an aspect of their life, but there are signs all around them, and they are beginning to make those signs are beginning to make themselves known to the individual. So the individual is starting to become aware, starting to have a conscience about something is not right in their life. In stage two, that is the contemplation stage. And at this stage, a person has become aware that there is something not right in their life and that they may be, and they are now possibly more fully aware that they might have an unwanted behavior or a general aspect or situation in their life. In other words, they become dissatisfied with things as they are. They take stock of things and weigh the pros and cons of their life or that aspect of their life that they're uncomfortable with. And at this stage, the decision is made whether or not to do something or if that area is even worth doing something about changing it, or if they feel that that's just too much work and it just makes them, and whatever it is just not making them uncomfortable enough to put in the work of changing whatever it is that they become aware of. Now in stage three, this is the preparation stage. And it's during this stage that the person that has recognized that there's an area of change in their life, something needs to be done about something, prepares to make the change. Usually we don't just dive straight into a major life change, guys. We prepare for it. So think back on your life changes, like marriage, divorce, buying a home, or taking up a new job. You didn't just dive right in and do those things. You prepared mentally and perhaps even physically for that change. You arranged your support network. You deliberated on the best moves to make and when to make them. You put into place safeguards to hopefully ensure that the change will be a positive change, and when you make the change, everything will move forward smoothly. Now, fair warning, not all our preparations in this stage work out, we don't even oftentimes cover all of the eventualities that come up when we take the step of change. However, even the most impetuous of people attempt to place safeguards to make the transition smooth. As the old saying goes, though, best laid plans, quote unquote, can go astray. If you think back to earlier in this episode during Raise a Cuppa, I talked about how I became aware of an unwanted behavior that I have of my snapping at my husband. So I have gone through the stages. I am currently I'm teetering between preparation stage and the next stage with this, which is called action. I have been made aware of it. I saw the unwanted behavior. I had a discussion with my husband. We made plans for how we would handle it if it came up again. So I'm in the preparation stage, but I'm teetering into the next stage because if it does happen, and my husband and I do take the actions steps that we have prepared for, then we will be in the action stage, which is the next stage of the change process. And this is stage four. So I think the word action in this one really kind of speaks for itself. However, just to clarify, this is the stage in which we make the change of whatever that is. We've put all of our preparation into action, and now we're putting the work into actively changing the aspect of our life that we have determined needs to change. Whether that is we've made the down payment on a house, or actually even further back than that, we've found out that we can get such and such line of credit from the bank, and we're now actively have a contract with a realtor, and we're out house shopping, right? So that right there would be more the stage of change there. In the job process, at this stage, it would be you are actively out there putting out your resume, taking job interviews, right? Perhaps even you've put in your notice to your current job. For me, when I decided to make the change of leaving my first husband, that change came rather suddenly due to a physically abusive situation. However, I had been making preparation to leave my ex-husband. For instance, I had moved out of the master bedroom or the main bedroom, or primary bedroom, I think is what they call it now, because I felt unsafe sleeping in the same bed with him. And I was sleeping on an air mattress in my home office. I had taken a second job working at McDonald's so I could secret away money, because I didn't have access to the money that I made with my husband, and so I had no money at my disposal. So if the emergency came that I did need to leave my husband, I had no way of accessing funds. And I had made some preparations in other ways. One thing that I had not done is tell my family that I was leaving. They didn't know about the true extent of the abuse that was going on. And that's very typical for people in an abusive relationship. But then when the specific traumatic event did happen that perpetuated me walking out of the house that night, I had an emergency bag packed that was already in my car. I had dog food in there. I had a sleeping bag. So that night I slept in my car. I had money squirreled away. I was able to quickly get back on my feet, mainly because of the support of my family members, but also because I had made the preparation to change. Now, was it then smooth going when I was in that action stage of change and leaving my ex-husband? Heck no. It was horrible. It was frightening. There were so many setbacks. My best laid plans went astray time and time again, but I persevered and I kept going, right? And that is what the next stage is. But before I say that, it's just really important that you remember that this stage rarely runs smooth. The hope is that your determination and internal strength is enough to provide you with the resources to stick to the action stage and the actions that you have taken. It's as if you see the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, and you are fighting your way through the dense, dark forest of hardships to attain that treasure. Okay? That's the action stage. So now, if you've taken all the steps of action and gone through many of the trials and the struggles that may be incurred due to the action stage, and that you've worked through those things, you now enter into the last stage of change, which is called maintenance. At this point, you should have a handle on things and in general, feel confident that no surprises are around the corner. And so you're able to maintain the desired change in your life. So continue taking action, maintaining that positive change in your life. Now, like I said, there is a secret stage of change in the change cycle, and it often happens during either the action or the maintenance stage of this process. something honestly could come up that overwhelms your internal resources to cope or even continue with the action of change. And so this stage, this hidden stage, is called relapse. It's not one of shame or guilt, but this is a place to retreat to again contemplate the need for change and prepare more effectively for the change before you take action the next time. Now, we've all fallen into the stage of relapse, though we most often associate this word of relapse with drug or alcohol use. Here I'm speaking in the terms of life changes. We can have relapses in that area. They say, you know, that failure is the best teacher. And at the same time, our society often looks down on someone who has, quote unquote, failed or relapsed. My honest encouragement is to take a different viewpoint. Now, I'm saying this, and in my own life, I've struggled to take this viewpoint. So take that for what it's worth. But my philosophy is, and I hope that the next time I have a relapse situation that, or I quote unquote fail at something, that I do take this viewpoint. See this time as an opportunity to learn and grow within yourself. So perhaps something you thought was a strength within you is actually an opportunity for growth. And then similarly, perhaps there is an aspect of your internal being that has been waiting and yearning to be utilized, but you weren't aware of it. You didn't even know you had that in you. And then the strength just blooms and comes into the light of day, and it's bolder, and you are bolder because of it. And so your so-called previous strengths have been emboldened by this new strength that you find within you. And maybe those things that you thought were strengths within you before actually weren't really there when push came to shove, right? That's what I mean when I say that what a perceived strength might actually turn into an area for growth. All of this can only take place, though, if you are in a learning mindset. So that's why I'm encouraging you to take the time to really take a step back when you quote-unquote fail or quote-unquote have a relapse in any of the stages in your life. Now, I could go on and mention so many examples in my own life about that I've gone through the stages of change. But I actually just want to invite you now to think about a major event in your life. Let's start there, right? What was a major event in your life, and how did that event come to pass? Did you maintain that event? Or like as an action, right? Or was there setbacks? So maybe you did buy a home, but then back in the, what was it? Was it the early 2010s when we had, again, the financial collapse and people were being foreclosed on right and left, right? Did that perhaps happen if you bought a home in the past? In our society, that's viewed as a failure, but you had a relapse, in my view, and it doesn't mean that you are destined to never own your own home or to feel safe in a home, right? It just means that you have to take a step back, contemplate, make preparation and planning before you again take the action stage, right? So what was a big event for you? Contemplate that and see if you didn't follow the different stages of change. And if you want a little help on this, I have an infographic on my Between Knits and Pearls page, episode 61. And I have all of the stages of change laid out there with little thought bubbles on my infographic. And I use this graphic when I'm teaching this to the employees at Catholic Social Services. I use this infographic constantly because it's a really, honestly, well, not to toot my own horn, but I feel like I really covered all of the stages of change in there. And so you can use it. All right. That is personal skill set.
A time for Hygge. Let us begin with a quote.
Hygge is about an atmosphere and an experience rather than about things. It is about being with the people we love, a feeling of home, a feeling that we are safe, that we are shielded from the world, and allow ourselves to let our guard down. This is by Meek Weeking. I don't think I'm getting their name right, but this is from the Little Book of Hygge, Danish Secrets to Happy Living. Very good book. I love it. I highly recommend it. So here's my thoughts around this. Our lives are very stressful. We're going through a lot of global and political change. We are constantly going through local and even familial and internal changes. And this can take a very high toll on a person's internal resources. So this episode, I want to encourage you to pause and think about that quote I just read to you. And I'll read it to you again at the end of this segment. Tonight, as you wind down from your stressful day and prepare for bed, contemplate a life experience that has brought the feeling of joy, of home, of safety into your life and heart. Who was there with you in this experience or memory? Think about or contemplate the surroundings of this past experience. Where were you? What did your surroundings look like? Next, I invite you to hone in on the feeling of comfort and joy. Was there a particular thing that happened in that memory or that event that sparked that joy? Or was it the overall experience? Now ask yourself, how can you cultivate more experiences like this in your own life? Perhaps there are some simple changes that you can make to encourage moments like these to occur more often. Now go to sleep. Let your mind dwell on this happy memory. Allow it to relax you into slumber. There's plenty of time to make those simple changes in your life so that that memory, that moment in your past that brought joy, safety, and peace can occur again in the future. So let's end this segment with the quote again. Hygge is about an atmosphere and an experience rather than about things. It is about being with the people we love, a feeling of home, a feeling that we are safe, that we are shielded from the world, and allow ourselves to let our guard down. Meek Weeking. Contemplation Corner. You will know you made the right decision. You will feel the stress leaving your body, your mind, your life. Bridget Nicole. Well, my friends, our time on this episode has come to a close. I hope that this was enjoyable for you and that maybe I was able to provide a little bit of clarification on the subject of change and how that might look like in your life. One thing I forgot to mention during the administration segment, if you would like to support this podcast, you can go to ko-fi.com/littlecabinknits, all one word, Little Cabin Knits, and you can support me by making a one-time donation or a recurring donation of a monthly one, and your support is greatly appreciated, and know that I really do appreciate. I had one person give a substantial donation a couple weeks back, and I really want to thank you for doing that. I'm not going to say your name or anything, but I do want to thank everyone so far who has donated, and thank you so much for that. And so thank you guys so much for joining me today as I recorded for the first time in 3 months, I think. Let's make this a regular thing. Let's go back to our bi-weekly. I'm going to try. But thank you, my friends. And remember, until next we speak, knit what you love and love what you knit. Ta-ta for now.